Normally, probably 95% of the time, we do one kind of message here, an in-depth exegetical review of a passage from the Bible. But every now and then we break from that to discuss the relevance of the Bible to current events or to do an overview of what the Bible says on a particular topic. If you're looking for strict exegesis, you will have to come back next week because this is one of the topical messages. This week we're going off the beaten path to consider a question which may seem a bit silly and irrelevant. Is the earth flat? Now, if you're anything like me, you immediately answered that with a resounding no. But strange as it may be, we are living in a time when the idea of a flat earth is proving to be quite popular. According to a YouGov survey from 2018, about 2% of Americans, which would be around 6 million people, believe the earth is flat. Apparently, younger generations are more likely to believe this than older ones. And this idea is relevant to our biblical studies because often proponents of the flat earth hypothesis use passages from the Bible to bolster their arguments. According to the survey cited above, most flat earthers consider themselves to be very religious, significantly outweighing the percentage of Americans in general who say that they are very religious. So we're forced to ask the question, does the Bible actually teach that the earth is flat? It is not an inconsequential question. If the Bible does teach that the earth is flat, and if the earth is spherical, then the Bible would be quite wrong, and if wrong, then not divinely inspired. In that case, we would have to upend our entire worldview. The topic is also, very sadly, increasingly relevant to Christian apologetics. I'm sure I'm not the only one who is aware of now common attempts to dismiss the Bible on the grounds that it is unscientific. We hear the claim that the Bible is just the ramblings of uneducated Bronze Age goat herders who, despite having supposedly heard from God, knew so little that they believed the earth was flat. The anti-science narrative doesn't just extend to the Bible itself, but also to Christian history, where it is claimed that Christians, after coming to power, toppled the light of knowledge in ancient Rome, plunging the Western world into centuries of dark ages where people lived in utter ignorance, believing the world was flat and persecuting anyone who said otherwise. And of course, the fact that there are today Christians, a small minority but one which is gaining oversized attention, who claim that the earth is flat, isn't really helping the Christian reputation on this. Maybe you're listening to me and are thinking that there's some truth to the atheist narrative, or to the flat earth narrative. Well, is there? Does the Bible actually teach that the earth is flat? Did Christians actually hold to that view historically? Are modern Christians opposed to scientific inquiry? And what does all of this say about the place of Christianity in the modern world? Let's dig in. First off, let's note why we are studying this matter today. If you have been following along chronologically, you know that we are in the midst of a study of the book of 1 Samuel. Last week, we studied the beginning of chapter 2, in which Hannah delivered a poetic praise to God. Therein, she described God as having founded the earth, saying, quote, "The pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and on them he has set the world." This is not the only verse in the Bible which describes the earth as sitting on pillars or otherwise having a foundation. Other examples would include Psalm 75:3 or Job 9:6. We noted that this is an inaccurate description of how the world actually works. The world isn't sitting on pillars. Of course, we also noted that this is a poetic descriptor surrounded by poetic descriptors. In this same utterance, Hannah also said that God is a rock. We don't take her literally on that either. However, a world sitting on pillars, if it were taken literally, might mean a world that is flat like a plate. Then again, it might also not mean that. A ball can sit on a pillar just as well as a plate can. However, it is this verse which spurred the topic of discussion for the day. So, let's answer the main question. Is the earth flat? No, it is not. There is ample evidence of this, and it has been known to mankind for a long, long time. Honestly, I'm not fully convinced that a belief in the flat earth was ever particularly common in the Western world. Any person can look up at the moon and see the round shadow of the earth crossing in front of it, and ancient peoples paid a lot of attention to the moon. The entire Hebrew calendar in use for all of ancient Israel's history was based on the phases of the moon, and the Bible takes note of this. It seems to me that anyone who could see the moon, if he used just a little thought, would realize the Earth is round. Even the nature of the moon in going around the Earth seems to suggest a round Earth, and the fact that the moon, as well as every other thing to be seen in the heavens with the naked eye, is round, also suggests that the rock we're on is round as well. For as long as there have been civilized societies, there has been sea travel. When a boat crosses the horizon, its top is seen before its bottom, because it has crossed the curve of the Earth. Surely people in Old Testament times noticed this. So people have known that the Earth is spherical for a long, long time. How long exactly people have known this, I can't say. Pythagoras is often credited as being the first person to certainly know that the Earth was round, around 500 BC. But whether others knew it sooner, I guess, is hard to say. We note 500 BC would have put this into Old Testament times. Clearly, though, that the Earth is round was well enough known that before 200 BC, in the intertestamental period, Greek philosopher Eratosthenes had calculated the circumference of the Earth with relative accuracy. It seems that for him to have even gotten to that task, the knowledge of a round Earth must have been already common knowledge and widely accepted. So how did Eratosthenes do it? He calculated the circumference of the Earth by using maps at his disposal to determine the distance between two known places on the map, and then he measured the lengths of shadows in both of those places at the same time. The result? At noon, shadows are longer at higher latitudes than they are at lower latitudes. Why? Because the Earth is curved, that's why. Using a little math, Eratosthenes was able to determine that if the shadow shifted by X much over Y distance, then the Earth was Z circumference. Eratosthenes went on to make the most comprehensive map of the world ever known at that time. He invented the system of latitude and longitude. His work was surely valuable to travelers the world over, including the Romans, who built an empire over much of the map. So by the time Jesus was born 200 years later, knowledge that the Earth was round surely was commonplace. I would have a hard time believing this wasn't something that virtually everyone knew. And of course, since that time, we have seen much more evidence than the ancients had. The Earth has been circumnavigated, people have made treks across the South Pole, which would not be possible if the Earth was flat. Photos have been taken from space showing a round Earth, satellites have been in orbit, etc., etc., etc. The Earth simply is not flat. For the Earth to be flat, there would have to be a conspiracy grander than any conspiracy in all of history, in which for thousands of years and all over the Earth, virtually every explorer, scientist, general, astronaut, seafarer, stargazer, traveler, mathematician, and airline pilot was in on it. That there could be a conspiracy so vast is simply unbelievable, and it is certainly less credible than the seemingly obvious idea that the Earth is a globe. So, since we know this as an unassailable fact, we must ask whether the truth is in agreement with the Bible. Does the Bible teach that the Earth is flat? Before we dig into the verses, I'd like to take a moment to consider whether or not the people who wrote the Bible believed the Earth was flat. As noted above, by the time of Jesus, any educated person would have known the Earth is not flat. That doesn't necessarily mean that Jesus' disciples, who were generally not highly educated, knew this, but my presumption is that they did. As experienced fishermen, they surely knew a thing or two about sailing and navigating by the stars. For Old Testament authors, I suppose the question is more open. Moses lived a long time before Eratosthenes. Again, I presume that he knew the Earth is round because it seems obvious enough that everyone should have known it. And he was part of the educated Egyptian class. But whether or not he knew that the Earth is round is somewhat irrelevant to the discussion. The fact is that accurate geological descriptions are not the Bible's subject matter. Moses and other Bible authors who came after him primarily wrote about their historical experiences with God. If Moses met God on Mount Sinai and told us about that accurately, whether or not he knew the Earth is round has no more bearing on the truth of that account than his knowledge of any other scientific fact, and I will remind my listeners, there are plenty of scientific facts that I'm sure we still don't know. Now, if you tell me about your trip to the beach, I won't say that your account is dubious on the grounds that you don't understand and make explicit mention of particle physics, because it's just not relevant to your trip to the beach. So, what Bible authors thought doesn't really matter. All that matters is what they wrote. No one has ever claimed that the authors of the Bible were all-knowing and perfectly inerrant. The claim is that they were divinely inspired to write what they wrote, and that what they wrote is the absolute inerrant truth from God. So then, with that in mind, let's consider a sample of the actual verses in question and determine what precisely they did right. This is not necessarily an exhaustive list of verses that might be called upon to demonstrate a flat earth, but they are the ones that I've found people citing online, and they seem to be a good representation of the best issues. In Job 38, 4 through 7, God says, quote, "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell, if you have understanding, who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy?" Well, that doesn't say the earth is flat. It might somewhat imply that, in that it uses language relevant to building a house, which has a flat floor. God says that he set the measurements, stretched the line, and laid the cornerstone. But of course, we don't take that literally. No one suggests that God literally got a measuring tape and stretched it out. This is a passage of poetry from Job, which is a book of poetry. This same chapter has God talking about the doors which contain the sea. No one reading this comes to the conclusion that ancient peoples believed the ocean was literally held back from flooding the land by an actual physical door. Verses 12 through 14 of the same chapter say this, "Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the skirts of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it? It is changed like clay under the seal, and its features stand out like a garment." Again, that doesn't say the earth is flat. It might suggest the earth is flat and that clay stamped with a seal is flat. But we don't expect that God literally shaped the mountains by pressing them with a seal. And no one suggests that the earth literally has a skirt. Yet again, these are simply poetic descriptors. Another verse that receives scrutiny is Isaiah 11:12. This verse mentions the four corners of the earth. And this, I suppose, has suggested to some that the earth is literally a square or a rectangle. This isn't the only verse which uses such language. Job 37:3, Revelation 7:1, and Revelation 27 also mention the four corners of the earth, and several other verses mention the ends of the earth. But the idea that this describes a literal rectangular earth, or an earth with an edge, is just silly. Yet again, the specific verses mentioned above are in passages which are filled with symbolic language. The idiom four corners of the earth is still in use today. It describes the farthest reaches from a place, as in reaching to each corner of the map. The idea that this passage proves Isaiah thought the earth was a flat rectangle and that he intended to teach such is pure poppycock. And that is especially so since if Isaiah did think that, then he plainly contradicted himself in the next relevant verse. That one is Isaiah 40:22, which in describing God reads, "It is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them like a tent to dwell in." So obviously Isaiah didn't think the earth was a rectangle, since here he called it a circle. Of course, as noted, this is also a passage rife with symbolic and poetic language. Isaiah did not literally think the people on earth are grasshoppers. He didn't think the sky is a curtain. This is not a scientific description of the earth. It is poetry glorifying God as being all-powerful over and metaphorically higher than the created world. Of note, if we did want to take this very literally, it is correct that seated from high above the earth does look like a circle. In fact, the only shape that looks like a circle from every angle is a sphere, and in fact, the word here translated circle can also rightly be translated as sphere. So arguably, Isaiah, who was writing before the time of Pythagoras, would be the first person to leave behind a description of a round or globular earth. Psalm 93:1 and several other verses like Psalm 104:5, Psalm 96:10, and 1 Chronicles 16:30 use language saying that the earth will never be moved. You will note the high incidence of such language occurring in Psalms, that is, in poetry. The Bible does not intend that the earth literally does not move. Even if it did, that wouldn't mean the earth is flat. The earth is unmoving in the sense that it is enduring. It is greater than us. We move relative to it, but it is solid under our feet. We die off, millennia pass, and the earth remains. The point is that God, who made the enduring and relatively stable earth, is greater than the earth, and thus greater than us. Now, this is not every verse used to support the idea of a flat earth, but this is a good representation, and I think the above sample is enough to demonstrate what the Bible's opinion on this is. The Bible doesn't say the earth is flat. It gives no opinion on the matter. What it gives are poetic, idiomatic, and symbolic descriptors of the Earth, which on occasion might sound flattish, but which certainly don't ever say the Earth is flat. In fact, the Bible arguably says, seemingly ahead of its time, that the Earth is a sphere. Did Christians historically believe that the Earth is flat? No, at least not commonly. With few exceptions, the early church fathers did not believe in a flat earth, and the medieval scholars who followed them didn't believe it either. I will cite as one example Arnobius, a Christian apologist who wrote in 305 AD, quote, "In the first place, indeed, the world itself is neither right nor left. It has neither upper nor lower regions, nor front nor back, for whatever is round has no beginning or end." For more relevant comments made by Christian authors on both sides, you could look at Wikipedia and find an article on the topic Flat Earth. Now, knowing Wikipedia's generally liberal slant, I say with some degree of confidence that you will find a representation there of every early Christian who ever said anything, even suggesting the Earth was flat. Methodius and Lactantius, who appear to accept a spherical Earth but not a spherical universe, are both mentioned. Augustine is also cited not because he believed the Earth is flat, but because he believed the other side of the Earth had no people on it, based on the idea that it was too far for anyone to sail there. In all, it lists no more than a handful of Christian scholars who believed, or may have believed, that the Earth was flat. The flat Earth idea certainly was not widespread, nor held as a matter of crucial doctrine, nor forced upon anyone. By the advent of the Middle Ages, the idea of a flat Earth had seemingly died out entirely. One common symbol from the Middle Ages, which you would probably recognize, is the Globus Crucifer. It was an image of a cross affixed to the top of an orb, common in royal regalia. The Globus Crucifer represented Christ as ruling over the world. For royals to use this symbol, they must have known the world was a globe. For the symbol to even have been developed, Christians must have known the earth was not flat. But if Christians have never believed this, then where does the myth of Christian belief in a flat earth come from? To answer this question, we look to historian Jeffrey Burton Russell. Russell was a professor of history at the University of California. He undertook a study of the myth that Christians believed in a flat earth and wrote a book on the topic called Inventing the Flat Earth. Incredibly, this book was published all the way back in 1991, but myths about Christians believing in a flat earth still persist. Russell said this, quote, "A few, at least two and at most five, early Christian fathers denied the sphericity of Earth. On the other side, tens of thousands of Christian theologians, poets, artists, and scientists took the spherical view throughout the early medieval and modern church. The point is that no educated person believed otherwise. In my research, I looked to see how old the idea was that medieval Christians believed the Earth was flat. I obviously did not find it among medieval Christians, nor among anti-Catholic Protestant reformers, nor in Copernicus or Galileo or their followers who had to demonstrate the superiority of a heliocentric system, but not of a spherical earth. I was sure I would find it among the 18th century philosophers, among all of their vitriolic sneers at Christianity, but not a word. I am still amazed at where it first appears. No one before the 1830s believed that medieval people thought that the earth was flat." Russell went on to explain the origin of the myth of medieval belief in a flat earth. Apparently, the idea of Christians believing in a flat earth was invented by Washington Irving, a writer of historical fiction who, in 1828, in writing the story of Christopher Columbus, depicted him as a simple sailor who upended the world by pushing back against an ignorant power establishment that believed, fueled by their religion, in a flat earth. But while that might make for an interesting story, it is not factual. It is historical fiction. It is true that Columbus struggled to get funding for his voyage across the ocean blue, but that isn't because the leaders of society believed the world was flat. It was because they believed Columbus wouldn't be able to sail all the way around the world, and they were proved right about that. Columbus did not make it around the world as he had planned, and was just incompetent enough that when he reached the Caribbean, he thought he was in Asia. If he had not hit the Caribbean by a stroke of luck, he would have died. Around that same time, in 1834, rationalist thinker Antoine Jean Latrone, who evidently had no other intention than to slander Christianity, propagated the idea that early Christians believed the earth was flat, and this was eagerly accepted by atheists who wanted to defame Christians. But it was not true. While atheists were attempting to depict Christianity as having extinguished the light of knowledge for 1,000 years, the reality is that Christian Europe stood out from the rest of the world for its wealth of knowledge. Despite modern revisionist attempts to cast the Romans as purely rational thinkers who were thrown down, pre-Christian Rome wasn't more educated than later Christian Europe. The Romans were pagans. They believed in a multitude of imaginary gods. They believed the god Apollo drove the sun around the earth like a chariot. They would sacrifice their own children to appease these gods in hopes of winning wars and having healthy crops. And in later times, the rest of the pagan world was no better educated. According to Wikipedia, the Hindu Vedas, Hinduism's closest equivalent to the Bible, teach explicitly that the earth is flat like a wheel. From the same source, we read that in China, the Buddhists believed the earth was flat until the 1600s, and they believed that until none other than European Christian missionaries came and told them otherwise. So do not allow anyone by these flat earth myths to deceive you into believing that medieval Christian Europe brought on a so-called dark age of unparalleled ignorance, because it simply is not true. So where did this modern flat earth hypothesis come from? Surely it started with the Bible, right? No. The modern idea that the earth is actually flat started in the mid-1800s with a man named Samuel Rowbotham. Rowbotham was not a Christian minister, and he did not get his idea from the Bible. He got his idea from the Bedford Level experiment, in which he observed boats traveling down a straight canal for a long distance. It was his bad scientific observation, not his religion, that formed the basis for his belief in a flat earth. He did, however, use the Bible to bolster his claims after the fact. Rowbotham went on to found a society for the propagation of his ideas, and his successors continued to publish his ideas. Evidently, the movement died down in the late 1900s, and how could it not? A man had been on the moon at that point. But then this idea enjoyed a resurgence after the advent of social media, which allowed it to flourish. Now, obviously, the earth is not flat, and there is plenty of evidence for this. So why, in this new movement, are there so many people who are so willing to believe that the earth is flat? Well, I can't speak for every person in a large movement, obviously, but I think the reason people are buying this has much less to do with the teachings of Christianity and much more to do with the scientific establishment losing credibility in conservative and Christian circles, because the scientific establishment has been making distinctly unscientific claims for decades. They've been asking people to believe a wide variety of untrue things, despite the fact that those people can clearly see that those things aren't true. If a person or a group of people makes claims over and over, year after year, that are obviously false, at some point, there are listeners who will stop believing anything those people say. We've been in an environment for so long in which government, media, and academia have been lying so severely, so obviously, about so many things, and for so long, that I propose some people have given up on listening to any official narrative and have decided to accept nothing more than what they can see with their own two eyes. It's not a good way to look at the world, but to some degree, it's hard to blame them for looking at it that way. First, the scientific establishment told us that we all evolved from a primordial soup. Despite having no hard evidence of this and against all statistical probabilities that make it impossible. After decades of trying, no one has been able to make life spring from this supposed primordial soup. Experimentation has effectively disproved the hypothesis of abiogenesis. Then they told us in the 1970s that a man-made change in the climate has doomed us all to die from global cooling, which would bring on an ice age. And then in the 90s, when no ice age appeared, we were told that we would die from global warming. And now, since no one could decide whether we would die from heat or cold, we're told that we'll all die from climate change in general. We've passed the tipping point. These outlandish prophecies of impending doom have never actually played out, and so they become harder and harder to trust. We've been told continually by liberal academics for the last 50 years that a fetus in his mother's womb is only a lump of flesh and not a unique living being until after the first trimester. Despite mountains of evidence that the fetus has its own genetic code, its own blood, its own beating heart, and the ability to feel pain. At the turn of the century, popular science insisted that homosexual affinity was an immutable inborn genetic trait, despite the fact that no so-called gay gene was ever found, and despite the fact that studies of twins proved that two people born with the same genes but raised in different environments could have different sexual proclivities. And now, in the 2020s, we're being told by the media and the academic community that no person's sex can be certainly determined at birth, despite the fact that in all normal and healthy cases, anyone with functioning eyes can see the difference. Christianity is not to blame for all of this anti-scientific nonsense. It is not the fault of any pastor that the scientific community has lost so much credibility. Flat earthers are using the Bible as evidence, but it is not the Bible telling people the earth is flat. So where does this motivation really come from? I would suggest to you that the flat earth theory as we know it today came about as a natural backlash against the scientific community, which the scientific community brought upon itself. And so today we're beset with a narrative that Christians are opposed to science. But is that true? Well, to answer that, we have to ask the question, what is science? The word science simply means knowledge. Obviously, Christians are not opposed to knowledge. The word science as used today often describes knowledge which we know by the scientific method. In that method, we make observations about the world, formulate hypotheses about how the world works based on those observations, and then perform experiments to test those hypotheses to determine whether or not they are true. When something has passed rigorous scientific experimental testing for many years and with the same results, something graduates to the level of being a scientifically accepted theory. Now, so far as I know, no one in Christianity has a problem with this idea. In fact, we could argue that the Christian worldview, which holds that the world was created by a rational God who gave the world orderly rules which can be objectively observed to determine definitive truth and falsehood, is the foundation on which the scientific method was built. As I've mentioned before, you don't get that out of a chaotic pagan worldview in which the rules change based on which god comes to power, or in the Eastern mentality, which holds that there is no objective truth, or in the anti-empiricist philosophy held by some atheists. And in fact, many of the founding men of modern science, the likes of Isaac Newton, were Christian men who conducted their studies at Christian colleges. The question today is not whether Christians are opposed to science, but whether modern scientists are conducting valid scientific inquiry and drawing correct conclusions. The scientific community is not an undefiled sanctum that always tells perfect truth. Scientists can't conduct large-scale studies for free. They get their funding from political groups or corporate ventures or governmental entities, which often want a certain outcome. There is pressure on scientists to fudge the numbers, and there is big bias in determining who does this research. Modern academia has a decidedly anti-Christian tilt, which is only growing worse. As more unbelievers make it to the top of academic circles, they have more power to welcome in like-minded individuals and to push Christians out. And as the scientific community rallies around a certain set of conclusions, people who disagree with those conclusions are less likely to enter the upper ranks, less likely to secure the funds, and less likely to be heard. Indeed, speaking truth to the academic powerhouse puts a person at risk of losing his job and his academic credentials. So we see very powerful feedback mechanisms that encourage the scientific community to go down a path and then stick with it. Unfortunately, they seem to have started down a wrong path. And as mentioned in several examples above, much of what we are today hearing from academia does not pass scientific muster. Take the so-called theory of human evolution from apes, for example. It is really only a hypothesis. There is no scientific experiment possible, apart from time travel, which could prove or disprove human origin. Because humans originated at one point in the distant past. This is not testable. The results are not repeatable. A person can put forth the hypothesis that humans evolved from apes, but there is no possible way to prove it. So to say that humans certainly did evolve from apes and to crown this as an experimentally validated scientific theory is simply bad science. And to then take that so-called science and to make it legally requisite teaching in public schools with competing ideas like intelligent design pushed out of the classroom is even worse policy. But then I could say a great deal about why public schools are bad policy in general. We won't go there. If Christians don't actually believe that the earth is flat and aren't actually opposed to science, then where are these accusations coming from? Because they have become all too common. Well, let's look at the obvious. There are a lot of people out there who are interested in tearing down Christianity, and cheap attacks from anti-Christian parties have become very common in recent decades. To give one prominent example, we have seen dishonest attacks on Christians from homosexuals. The Christian position is that homosexual behavior is immoral and detrimental, and we care enough about homosexuals that we want to tell them that their behavior is detrimental so that they will avoid living in a way that is bad for them. We pray for them to leave that lifestyle so that they can have a better life in Christ, both now and in the hereafter. But we've all seen how homosexuals responded to that. They screamed that we're haters and branded us homophobic and tried to run us all out of business. The very claim embedded in the word homophobic is that we are all just ignorant and afraid of what we don't understand. And so they set up this straw man, which they then publicly thrashed in the media for decades on end. And this defamatory depiction, this bearing of false witness, had an actual effect of stigmatizing and harming Christians, and ultimately resulted in changes in political policy. And I don't think that the attempt to attach the flat earth hypothesis to Christianity is any different. There are people out there who, for whatever reason, are opposed to Christianity, but these people can't engage Christianity honestly because they would lose an honest argument. Christianity is the truth, and it is hard to beat the truth. So what do? They create a caricature of Christianity that is obviously false, and then they beat up on it instead. In one case, we're dishonestly called fearful hate mongers, and in this instance, we're being depicted as ignorant, backward, and irrationally opposed to scientific inquiry. And think of how silly this all is. A few, a very few, flat earthers make false citations from the Bible, and suddenly, it is as if it is grounds to dismiss all of Christianity. Does anyone hold the academic community to the same standard? If flat earthers make false citations from a scientific journal, as they surely do, would that be grounds to dismiss scientific inquiry? Of course not. The entire idea is poppycock. I will suggest to you that the reality of the matter is that the people making the accusation that Christianity is pro-flat earth generally don't believe that accusation any more than we do. It's not like we've got atheists who sit down to read the Bible, giving it genuine consideration, and they find the words four corners of the earth and say to themselves, "Why, this must mean the Bible says the earth is flat. I simply can't believe this religion, and I must inform Christians so that they will know the truth about what the Bible actually says." No, the reality is much different than that. What is more common is that we have atheists who have decided against Christianity, and then they try to think up a way to attack Christianity, and someone suggests that the Bible says the earth is flat, and the atheist, who probably hasn't even read the passage in question, adds the attack to his arsenal of standard weapons to wield against Christians. To demonstrate the reality of this phenomenon, I'd like to cite for you the sad case of Abraham Piper. Abraham is the son of prominent evangelical pastor and author John Piper, but Abraham has gained notoriety for having become an outspoken atheist. Abraham was excommunicated many years ago from his father's church at the age of 19 when he converted to atheism, and he later said this of his reason for leaving Christianity. Quote, "At first I pretended that my reasoning was high-minded and philosophical, but really, I just wanted to drink gallons of cheap sangria and sleep around." End quote. So that's what modern Christians are up against. When we're dealing with these kinds of attacks, we're not facing a world that wants to play fair. Often we're not dealing with people who want to come to the table and have rational discussions. What we're up against is a world that simply wants to live in error and which hates us for bringing on unwelcome correction. As John wrote in his Gospel in chapter 3, verses 19 through 20, and this is the judgment, "The light has come into the world, and the people loved the darkness rather than the light, because their works were evil. For everyone who does wicked things hates the light, and does not come to the light, lest his works should be exposed." Unfortunately for some people, it is better to fight with lies than it is to be exposed by the truth. My hope, then, is this. If you are a Christian, I hope that you would have the fortitude to stand strong for the faith in the face of those who would sneer at you. If you are not a Christian, I hope that you would be honest with yourself about your intentions. And if you are on the outside looking in on the ongoing debate between Christians and our detractors, I hope that you would start to give Christians the benefit of the doubt, because most often the attacks made against Christianity are not true and are not made in good faith. To conclude then, virtually everyone knows that the earth is not flat. As we have seen, the Bible does not teach that the earth is flat, and Christians have not ever historically believed that the earth is flat, at least not authoritatively or in large numbers. The suggestion that Christians have ever believed that, or that the Bible teaches that, was dreamed up seemingly with the intent of doing dishonest harm to Christianity. The matter might seem totally off the wall irrelevant, and yet I felt compelled this week to bring up the issue because I find that the flat earth attack against the Bible is increasing in frequency, with Christians being caricatured as ignorant rubes. Neither the Bible nor Christianity in general is to blame for the flat earth movement. The reality may well be that the scientific community's growing lack of credibility has more to do with the problem than Christianity does. I think that discussing the matter is valuable in that it shows the truth of historical Christian belief and our actual position on scientific inquiry, and in doing so, it exposes a deeper trend in modern religious and political discourse, that those who oppose Christianity often intend to tear us down with dishonest strawman characterizations rather than engaging in honest discussion. So then let us stand strong in the face of our detractors and shine the light of truth to a dark world.
For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.